Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fifth day of December 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. It's World Soil Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo, a global commodity analytics and consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Ben Pruce of the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa, should join us a bit later to take a look at the cash grain market, and we'll hear all about the weather forecast in South America from meteorologist Ed Kieser, and Jim Angel will have an update of what's going to happen this weekend and next right here in the great state of Illinois. And we'll hear it all as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, a production of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. December corn futures at $3.81.5, up 5.5 cents. The March at $3.95, 5.25 higher. And the May futures at $4.03.5, down there, rather up 5.25. July futures also up 5.25 at $4.10. And December corn of next year at $4.22.75, a nickel higher. From the soy complex, bean futures finished at $10.36, up 25.5 cents. The May at $10.42, 24.75 higher. May futures $10.48.25, up 24.5. And July soybeans $10.53.5, up 24.75. Next year's November at $10.13.75, up 22.75 for the day. Bean meal at $3.94.20, up $8.50. And the bean oil at $32.01, up 41. Chicago wheat soft red winter at $6.09 in the December, 9.25 higher. July at $6.02.25, 3.5 cents higher. The Kansas City for the day. In the July harvest month at $6.43.25 for the hard red, up 3.5 cents. Live cattle futures finished the nearby December at $164.25, down $2.42.5. February at $164.55, also down $2.42.5. And the feeder cattle finished the nearby January at $234.30, down $1.65. March $222.5 lower at $229.82.5. Lean hogs on the day at $86.80. Down 82.5. This is Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
On this Friday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Let's turn our attention to the marketplace. Mike Zuzulo is here. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, out of Atchison, Kansas. Good Friday afternoon to you, Mike.
And back to you, Todd.
Well, let's talk about the beans to begin with, because they had a nice little rally in Chicago. What happened?
Well, I think they were the leader to the downside, and I think the supply bears probably came in and were thinking that the meal and the soybeans were going to start to see bigger supplies on weakening meal demand and improving South American weather. And so the net effect of this week's trade, when you threw that in the mix of then seeing the weekly export sales, the cash markets turn around, the equity markets make new all-time highs, and then the pre-report estimates coming out lower than I think the trade was expecting, and those jitters starting to hit about acres and yield, all of a sudden the bearishness on supply tended to go away pretty quickly. And in fact, January beans changed hands about 60 cents from their low to their high this week in the last two trading days of the week. So they became and stayed the leader in the marketplace. And I think this is where the trade is not really settled yet on what exactly the demand pace is. And they certainly aren't settled now because we've got this report coming up on Wednesday.
Naturally, we do have this report that's due on Wednesday. The World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates will be out. What were the numbers that interested you from the trade, and what kind of expectations do you have from Global Commodity
Support
Analytics
comes
and
from
Consulting?
Stewart.
Yeah, the pricing model I use, the elasticity model as I call it that I use, would suggest that now that we're going above 380 in the December corn and above 1025 in the January beans, we're going after those November mid-November highs in Dease corn. That was around 389 on the 13th, and on the 12th it was in January beans around 1086 and a quarter. As we approach those levels, the model would suggest that we're heading and pricing in the low end of the trade guess, $1.9 billion on the corn carryover and $400 million on the bean carryover, Todd. So average trade guess is just a little over $2 billion in the corn. We're probably just a little bit below that if the model's correct. The average trade guess on the beans of $427, we're probably below that by $15 million would be my guess at this stage of the game. And as I said, if you go another 20 cents higher in beans, another dime higher in the corn, you're probably getting close to those low trade estimates. So you're kind of setting yourself up, in my opinion, as needing to feed the bull in the report if you're pricing in bullish demand or bullish acres or bullish yield, which I think the trade's starting to do. And this calls into question whether you don't want to get some hedges freshened up in the corn, especially, I think, because a lot of the producers are holding corn. I think it may be wise to look at some January puts, like a 380 or a 390, and those January puts go until the 26th of this month.
So the low of the trade estimates, and we are at about 2 billion bushels for carryout for corn at the moment, and what, 450 for soybeans. But the low trade estimates are 1.85 billion, so sub 2 billion for the corn, and not quite sub 400 million, which is still a large number, but 403 or something like that for the soybeans. So these numbers start to get a little better, especially for corn, not so much for soybeans yet, because remember, carryout over time, over the last several years, has been in that 115 to 150 million bushels for soybeans. But you start to get into the sub one, sub twos, and you're down to 1.85. That's not a bad number for corn.
No, it's really not, and this is where it calls into question what the wheat market can then do for you as well. I mean, the sleeper in this market all over again this week was, again, in percentage terms, the wheat market. It was up 5.5%, and you know, it wasn't the leader in price action in my view, but it certainly was the best performer based upon the percentage gains versus the other two complexes. And this really goes back to a 2010 type market where the wheat actually becomes supportive. And it's very odd as the dollar shoots higher because the crude oil is going sharply lower, the Russian economy gets worse, and all of a sudden the Russian inflation becomes a huge problem for the Russian government. And it starts to beg the question whether all those potential wheat exports and supplies that could go into the export market by Russia won't be held by them to hold their domestic stocks up to backfill kind of their inflationary pressure. So this sharply lower Russian ruble and sharply higher dollar is not necessarily hurting us in investor demand or in terms of what Russia may do. Yes, it's hurting us on the actual export front, but it's a two-edged sword right now. So the lower the corn carryover becomes, the more friendly the wheat could even be looked upon, I think.
And if I remember correctly, the Russian wheat crop or the Black Sea crop in general is under pressure at this point while it's in dormancy. It has been dry and it needs a pretty good drink of water. There's a lot of time, but things haven't set up, I don't think, so well for their growing season.
No, you've got a big issue still brewing over there, and you still have a big issue in Australia, and you still have a big issue in Brazil, and you still have a big issue in Australia or in Argentina. So in the Black Sea region in particular, this morning's lows or yesterday morning's lows were 10, 11 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. Fortunately, most of the wheat belt there has some snow cover, but take the northern plains coming up here in the next couple weeks. It looks as though they're going to lose all of their snowpack here in this country. And so if we would see that here and that in Europe, where they get a warm-up and then all of a sudden you get another Arctic blast. And, you know, I know a lot of this is hypothetical, but it goes back to what you said about the 1.8 carryover in corn. You've changed the dimension of the market sentiment to one of burdensome supply where the wheat almost grows on trees and that's going to pressure the corn to, gosh, if we lose any more corn, we're going to need even more wheat. And I think that really needs to be, you know, looked at as we get into the medium-term marketing plan. Doesn't mean we're going back to $7 corn. Doesn't mean we're going back to maybe $6 corn, but it does suggest that getting back into those price levels where we were in the 2010-2011 time period should not be that difficult if weather cooperates.
Did you see numbers for what the trade was looking for an average yield for corn and soybeans, and what do those numbers look like?
Yeah, I don't think they're going much lower, but low enough because of increasing demand. I don't have specific numbers for you. I didn't look at those. I looked at the world-ending stocks and the U.S. ending stocks, but I think between the acreage question because of FSA data versus NAS data and the yield question and the demand question, there's enough in the mix there that the question mark is very big on the supply side as we get past, you know, into Wednesday. But once we get past Wednesday, yes, you have the big January report, but you have a lot of trade in between that January report and then you have the grain stocks report as well. So this is why maybe getting some paper hedges freshened up in the corn especially would not be a bad idea. I think it's good risk management, quite frankly.
So how is it that we go from 2 million to 185 if that's truly what happens?
It's exactly what happened last year, Todd. I mean, this is where last year is a really good model year, fundamentally speaking, where the trade and the USDA underestimated the demand side, the export demand, the ethanol demand, and we overestimated as a whole in the trade and as the government agencies as a whole the idea that the yield was going to be a multiplier effect higher than the trend line yield. And so I think those two scenarios are playing out once again, and we've seen this in the basis, we've seen this in the futures, where both have rallied this fall just like they did last fall. And you know, 2009 is still an excellent model year as well. I've still got a DEIS-14, DEIS-09 corn chart built that they're working very, very closely with one another. And here again, the DEIS-09 market was very firm going all the way up into expiration.
What do you think about the livestock market at this time?
It looks very vulnerable. I just looked at the live cattle chart on a weekly basis. You've got the 161 to 163 area as your old highs before we went up to this you jumped substantially and exponentially, so to speak, in terms of climbing that ladder in a straight-up manner in the last 3 to 5 months. You go back into the 160 level and you close below that on a monthly basis, you've got a technical high in place. And out here, guys are already starting to slow down and think about whether they want to rebuild their herd anymore. I've started to see heifer prices drop and cow prices drop as well. The calf prices are still doing very, very well, but you're starting to see the females get a little bit chunky as far as not getting what they were getting maybe 2 months ago.
Well, surely at $160, they can still make a lot of money at this. How quickly do you suppose they will stop rebuilding the herd? That seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to stop. I think it's kind of like the crude oil market. If you it depends on how fast you drop. You're going to slow down the increase. You're still going to grow supply in crude oil and grow supply in cattle, but you're going to slow down that growth. And so that's what the market function is. And so you're not looking at 125 cattle for, you know, probably at least another year, year and a half, because you do need to rebuild that herd. But if you start to see the corn price continue to tick up and you start to see the beef prices remain as high as they have been and weak demand continue, then you probably have a reason to believe that a high is in place. And that's really what it's about with the hedger right now. Is there a major high in place? And without substantial weather problems this winter, I think that could be the case. And this is where I'm not a short futures person here in the cattle market, but I sure like the bought puts from a standpoint of getting a floor in place.
Okay, now let's turn our attention to the outside markets. You mentioned crude oil at $65.61 a barrel. It's down $1.20 for the day. This is not quite half of where it was, but pretty close to half in 6 months or thereabouts. It's a long drop.
No, you're exactly right. 40% from the June highs, and there is an article in the Washington Post earlier this week that quoted an economist saying that every day American motorists are saving $630 million on gasoline compared with what they paid at those June prices, and that would be about $230 billion a year if we stayed at these price levels. And so you're talking about a substantial profit that's going straight back into the pocketbooks of Americans and major oil importers, and this works in favor of the Asians. This helps compensate some of the sharp rally in the U.S. dollar, and this is where it goes back to your cattle and your beef prices. You don't want to get too bearish this market because of what the crude oil is doing, even if the dollar is going straight up the flagpole, because Saudi Arabia has said essentially, you've seen a currency war develop in the currency markets, now you're going to see an oil war develop in the oil market. Our job now is to knock out the shale people, and we want our market share back. That's essentially what they've pretty much mapped out this week, between not cutting output and giving price discounts here in the United States and over in Asia.
We sure do appreciate you taking the time with us today.
I thank you, and I've got to say, you and Dave and all the crew there at Will did a terrific job in Bloomington Normal. I've gotten so much good feedback. I hope we do that a lot.
Me too. Thanks so much. I really do appreciate that, Mike. Mike Zuzlo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, joins us here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, by the way, if you want to hear some of what happened at the Farm Assets Conference, it's on our webpage already at willag.org, at least three of the six panels. The other three will come in the next couple of weeks. You can listen to the corn, the soybean, and the cash grain panels at willag.org. Turning our attention now to the agricultural news for this Friday afternoon, China, the world's top producer of rice and wheat, is seeking to cap the use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides that have helped to contaminate large swaths of its arable land and threaten its ability to keep up with domestic food demand. More than 19% of soil samples taken from Chinese farmland have been found to contain excessive levels of heavy metals or chemical waste. In central Hunan province, more than three-quarters of the rice fields have been contaminated, that according to government research in China. China is the world's top consumer of pesticides, but almost two-thirds of the pesticides are said to be wasted, contaminating both land and water, that according to an environment official. Now let's move to something a bit closer to home. The U.S. House has passed a bill to stop executive action on immigration. The House of Representatives passed a bill to stop the president's power of executive actions on immigration, but the bill is viewed largely as symbolic. The vote was 219 to 197 and included House Agriculture Committee ranking member Colin Peterson, a Democrat, voting yes. The White House Office of Management and Budget said the Obama administration strongly opposes the bill. Heritage Action, a conservative group, said it would not include the bill in its scorecard for members because it's purely symbolic. And this item from the United States Department of Agriculture, it has extended the Dairy Margin Protection Program sign-up deadline. USDA has once again extended the deadline for the Dairy Margin Protection Program. Dairy producers now have until December the 19th to sign up for the program. That according to U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. He says the safety net is not automatic. The program, established by the 2014 Farm Bill, protects participating dairy producers when the margin, the difference between the price of milk and feed cost, falls below levels of protection selected by the applicant. But in order to be covered, producers must sign up for the coverage. Farmers also have a chance to share comments and help shape the margin protection program for the future. Comments can be made online at regulations.gov. Comments must be submitted by December the 15th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Please do visit our website at willag.org. While you're there, hit over on the right-hand side of the page in the menu items, the Outlook meeting schedule, and you will find the Farm Doc daily links for the IFAS, Illinois Farm Economics Summits, for registration, along with a way to register for the Corn and Soybean Classics. Today is the last day to pre-register for the Classics at $60. Be sure to do that now. Registration after today and walk-ins are $75. So if you haven't gotten registered for the Corn and Soybean Classics, those are in January, you want to do it today, you can do that on our website at willag.org, at least find the links to do it over in the Outlook meetings schedule. Again, the Corn and Soybean Classics, those are the Crop Science Department around the state meetings in January. Many of you have been to them already. The Corn and Soybean Classics come up in January at $75 if you want to pay at the door. through the end of the day today, just $60 when you register online. Now I want to go back to one other item, that last news item on the margin protection program. U of I educators, as I reported to you already once in the Midwest, have created a new online tool for dairy farmers. It should help them make the decision about how to use the new federal safety program. Dairy farmers across the nation, again, have until December the 19th to enroll in the voluntary margin protection program that was established under the 2014 Farm Bill. The program provides financial assistance when the margin, the difference between the price of milk and feed cost, falls below the coverage level selected by the farmer. It's an insurance policy of sorts, but not an easy one to understand, says John Newton from the University of Illinois.
Several coverage options that producers can choose from. So they can choose from margin protection from $4 to $8 per hundredweight, and then they can cover 25 to 90% of their milk. So they are looking at key milk and feed price variables, but given the record crop that we're having this year, it looks like a lot of the risk is going to be on the milk side. So it's important for farmers to equate this new program to what type of milk price support it may provide.
Converting this coverage to a break-even Class 3 milk price is the goal of the online tool. It's a dashboard with gauges and charts. The farmer can put in a different feed cost for the price of corn, alfalfa, and soybean meal, and the chart changes to reflect how much premium the producer would pay for different insurance coverage levels and the break-even milk price.
So by inputting feed prices for corn, soybean meal, and hay, they can determine what milk prices are needed not only to trigger the program, but also to break even.
Well, those wanting to use the MPP Dairy Dashboard can find it on the FarmDoc Daily or dairymarkets.org websites. It's a creation of John Newton from the University of Illinois and Marin Bozek at the University of Minnesota. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this fifth day of December 2014. It's World Soil Day, according to the United Nations. At this time during the program, we normally take up the cash grain market. Today, we usually talk with Ben Pruce at the Andersons. He texted me during the show. He's in Everly, Iowa, that he was caught up in the midst of a meeting, so we won't talk with him this afternoon. I do have some other numbers that we have not gone through yet for you for the day. Crude oil at $65.63 a barrel. We did that one. It's down $1.18. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.07 is a penny and 9 tenths of a cent lower. And gasoline on the RBOB at $1.76.5, 2 8 tenths of a cent lower. Natural gas for the day at $3.78 6 tenths of a cent. And that's up 13 7 tenths of a cent. And ethanol on the day is trading the January contract at $1.73. It's 4 1/10 of a cent lower. A quick look at the weather forecast shows us that this afternoon we'll go to 41 on an east wind at 7 miles an hour. It will rain tonight, that'll all come before 3 a.m. A low of 34 degrees and tomorrow cloudy, gradually becoming mostly sunny with a high of 41 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of this half hour, just a couple of minutes away, in fact. We'll hear from Ed Kieser, meteorologist, about the South American weather. And we'll also take another look at what's been happening in the weather right here in the state of Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
It's National Tort Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1855, Clinton Hart Merriam was born. A biologist, he studied the effects of using birds to control agricultural pests. He also helped found the National Geographical Society, and he was the first chief of what is today the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. In 1864, Lewis Jones died, a U.S. agricultural biologist. His studies made possible a much greater control of potato diseases and increased yield. He also carried out fundamental studies on bacterial soft rot in carrots and other vegetables. In 1876, D.C. Stilson patented the first practical pipe wrench. In 1869, he had whittled a model out of wood, which he showed to his boss at the Walworth Company. Stilson was instructed to test one built out of steel. The test convinced the company owner that the concept was sound. In 1937, Ernest Brundin and Frank Lyon set up the first commercial-scale hydroponic plant culture system. A patent was issued to them on December 1st of 1936 for, quote, a system of water culture. And in 2006, New York became the first U.S. city to ban artificial trans fats in restaurant food. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Another round of heavy rain came to most of Argentina's production areas last weekend, stopping corn, soybean, and sunflower planting and winter wheat harvesting for several days. Mostly dry and hot weather has followed this week with high drying rates that has allowed field work to resume in most areas. Looking ahead, a cold front will move through this weekend, triggering scattered showers and thunderstorms. Rainfall amounts and coverage will be lower than last weekend, so only scattered and not long-lasting delays are expected. Next week, scattered areas of rain will occur from time to time, mostly in the northern half of Argentina. However, more often than not, dry weather will prevail, so the pace of field work should pick up. Overall, planting is about half complete in Argentina. In South Brazil and Paraguay, dry weather has prevailed in recent days, and that should continue through the weekend. This will promote rapid progress on remaining corn and soybean planting and wheat harvesting. Next week, a few cold fronts will approach from Argentina and weaken as they move across South Brazil. These fronts will likely trigger scattered thunderstorms, bringing near-average rainfall to South Brazil and Paraguay. The bottom line is no significant problems are expected. Periodic rains will keep soils favorably moist, but breaks in the rain will allow for field work to advance. In the coming weeks, the wettest region will be in center-west and southeast Brazil. This region had excessive rainfall in the past month, and it appears that frequent showers and thunderstorms will provide above-average rainfall in the coming week. As most soybeans and first crop corn are already in the ground, rainfall here should not be a problem. In fact, most areas will stay favorably moist for crop development and growth. We received an update on El Nino this week, and it shows no changes from expectations. Weak El Nino conditions are occurring in the eastern Pacific Ocean near the equator, and a weak to moderate El Nino is expected over the coming months. As mentioned last week, El Nino typically has a direct impact on corn and soybean growing season weather in South America, with wetter than normal conditions often noted in Argentina and South Brazil. While odds tilt that way for this growing season, a weaker El Nino puts less confidence on such a forecast. In our part of the world, a weak El Nino has little direct influence on our weather.
That's agricultural meteorologist Ed Kieser with an update of the South American weather forecast. Let's turn our attention now to what's been happening in the state of Illinois. Here's Jim Angel with a weekend forecast.
We can say goodbye to the cold weather in November and say hello to warmer than average weather in December. The National Weather Service forecast out to 14 days and the more general forecast for the month of December all point towards an increased chance of above average temperatures. Even so, we will still probably see a few excursions into real winter weather in December. Looking closer to this weekend and next week, the National Weather Service forecasts indicate that we should see highs in the 30s and low 40s on Saturdays, and in the 40s for Sunday through Thursday. The models show little chance of precipitation for the weekend and most of next week.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
And this is Illinois Public Media. Find our agricultural programming online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.